welcome back to this week's course content. So today we are going to be hearing a panel discussion from 2018, and it draws on material that many of you, perhaps even all of you, we began discussing in 2P06, perhaps with me, last year. That's an interesting thing, or maybe even perhaps concurrently right now in 2P06, because it draws on a really important facet of the nonprofit world, and that is this divide between mass recreation and elite sport, or sport in general, and fitness, and these types of issues, is they do all directly relate to the nonprofit organizations that you're working with this semester. This is essentially a roundtable discussion that talks about the future of this sort of divide and Canadian sport policy in general. And I think that it certainly has policy implications. If you're working on a policy team right now, and I think they're addressing the notion of declining sport participation in general. Each and every one of your nonprofits that you are working with in this class addresses or is affected by this notion of sport participation in Canada. All of these nonprofits would be extremely negatively impacted if sport participation was to decline at the rates that are suggested on this panel. So certainly this is from 2018, and this is in a pre-COVID world, which again, it instantly dates the material, that's sure. But these trends have continued, and it's something that is deeply alarming to many Canadian nonprofits that administer sport. And I will tell this to you again, I know that I warned you that I was going to mention this over and over this semester. But the vast 99% or more of sport administered in this country is administered by nonprofit sport organizations. Okay, and then depending on how you label some of the things that we would classify as professional sport, like the CHL, for instance, that is a registered nonprofit as well. So you can see there's so much sport that's administered by nonprofits at the youth level, at the recreation level, at the fitness level. This is an extremely important issue, and all of the organizations that you're working with this semester deal with this notion of sport participation. So I want you to listen to the arguments being prepared here. There's three fascinating speakers that they bring on who have high-level positions in the Canadian government. And this panel, again, it's not a widely sort of publicized event. It wasn't necessarily widely seen when it came about, but I think it really brings up some really key questions. It also deals specifically with the Ontario context in a couple of occasions. And there's some really interesting ideas here involving perhaps even the disbanding of Sport Canada in general that I think you would find very interesting, and I want to hear your thoughts afterwards in your form responses. So with that being said, and no further ado, we'll move to this panel discussion. Remember, when you're listening, be sure to take notes as soon as you find something interesting so that your task is easier when you're writing up your form responses. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you think of this wonderful panel.
Despite excitement over big events such as the World Cup and the Olympics, as well as for local professional sports teams, participation in sports has been on the decline in Canada for decades. There are plenty of solid policy reasons why that's not a good thing. Let's find out what might be done about it with Iga Egal. He is the author of the Mowat Centre's recent paper, Let's Get in the Game. He's a former executive director of the Toronto Inner City Rugby Foundation. Val Gasol is here. He's a former Minister of State for Sport in Stephen Harper's government, now Vice President at JSP Insurance and Financial Services, Inc., and Diane English, Director of Public Policy and Communications at Parks and Recreation Ontario. And it's good to have you three here in our studio at TVO tonight for a very timely conversation about how we get off the couch and get back into the game here. Ige, it's a good expression of which to start with you, since that's what you called your piece. How did you come to write that article for the Mowat Centre in the first place?
Thanks, Steve. It was a mix of curiosity, frustration, and a little bit of venting. In 2016, or last year actually, in 2017, I was invited to New Zealand to present about the work of the Toronto Inner City Rugby Foundation using rugby as a community building tool. And before I got there, I decided I'd do some research and try to find out why New Zealand was so good at not just rugby, but sport in general. So I came across Sport New Zealand, and I was just completely blown away. And I knew in Canada we had a good sport policy, but what I didn't know was that it had its own Achilles heel written into it.
Which was what?
Which was the one paragraph that said, due to the jurisdictional frictions in Canada, it shouldn't be taken as though any one particular government or one particular organization would be responsible for implementing the policy.
Jurisdictional meaning what the feds do, what the provinces do, all that.
That's correct.
There's always fighting about that.
That's correct.
Okay, yeah. All right. Now, you pointed out, I guess it was 25 years ago, that 45% of people in Canada participated in sports. Where are we today?
It's hard to say, but in 2010, StatsCan released a number that put it at 26%. And since then, we haven't had an update. And this is the challenge when you don't have an organization that's dedicated to measuring and evaluating the sector. But one thing is for sure, Steve, and that's young children ages 5 to 18 are not getting enough physical activity. We are not reaching the daily guidelines, whether it's 60 minutes or 30 minutes a day.
This was your not only your responsibility, but your passion for a few years during the Harper years. And I want to know why you think so few of us are staying active in sports at this time in our lives.
Steve, on top of the agenda, we have 13 different sports departments in Canada. There's one run by federal government. Then every province do their own thing. And after 10 years, we had a sports policy that was, it was a framework of all the organizations, 52 national sports organizations, communities and cities got involved. We developed a sports policy, which was signed on by all provinces. We were in it, for the policy conference in 2014. It was signed, that was the framework, and implementation was up to the provinces, cities, and organizations. And I can tell you that I was there from 2011 to 2015, and participation in those years did go up. We funded participation. They do a sport day in Canada. Canadian Tire Jumpstart do a good job.
We should just say participation. You brought that back. That was a thing about 40 years ago.
40 years ago.
And then disappeared, I guess.
Disappeared,
and
yeah. And we brought it back. Yeah, we brought it back, and that's paying dividends right now. And other thing, I truly believe the infrastructure. In Ontario is 40% of the population. When you look at the national teams, we represent the lowest number of athletes for a long time because we didn't have facilities. We didn't host anything for a long time. The Pan Am helped with that. With Pan Am Games, we have world-class facilities, participation's going up, and we are reaping more medals.
So we're at back the national, on the map there.
Back on the map there. So it's working. And other issue we have is the mandatory physical education. That was, gone away from the schools. BC was the first province to bring it back. Quebec is doing a lot. But the rest of the provinces, I think, to your point, Igor, we need to bring mandatory physical education back to schools.
Right to the end of high school?
Right to the end of high school.
How about in university or college as well? Want to go there?
We should. I think once the kids start participating at the younger level, then they get, hooked onto it, then keep on participating even through the universities. I mean, we got 12,000 university athletes, 2 years ago when I was involved, and they're all active, and we got good university sports programs, and we're very proud at the federal level to fund, all the programs.
Okay, Diane, let me get you in at this point. Sports versus physical recreation. Is there a difference there?
That's an age-old question, and one that the sport policy actually addresses, and other frameworks that have come out since, the Common Vision for Physical Activity, which was just released. We've got physical activity, we've got recreation, we've got sport. They should be working together. They should be collaborating because municipal recreation is often the entry point. High performance sport starts at the local level. And so creating that pathway through the different areas of expertise, you call them. So recreation has an area of expertise in engaging communities, in working with communities, in providing the facilities, in providing the physical infrastructure for sport.
Just fill in the blanks there. When you say it starts at the local recreational level, that means what exactly?
Think about the Learn To programs and giving every kid the opportunity to have that quality sport experience, whether it's learning to swim, learning to play soccer, learning to throw, kick, run.
Is it schools or in community centers
it's
or what?
It's both, but recreation has a mandate to provide those quality experiences. The after-school time period is ripe to get kids moving, to get them physically active, and also to teach them those physical literacy skills, the fundamental movement skills.
Physical literacy skills. I don't think I've heard that expression before. Physical literacy skills means what?
Means the fundamental movement skills to be competent and confident to be active for life. So physical literacy is a movement that's huge in Canada and is part of the Canadian sport policy, part of the Common Vision for Physical Activity, and part of the framework for recreation in Canada. So if we're not physically literate, we can't move with confidence, and we won't participate because that's just another barrier.
I assume another barrier. Okay, so like, physical literacy meaning can you throw a ball, can you skate,
yeah,
can you,
yeah,
all that stuff.
It throw, run, catch, slide, they're very simple. And there's markers that kids should be reaching by the time they're six in order to have those skills. And then you've got the choice because you can, you've got all of the skills, you've got all the tools you need.
We are, Ige, always looking to blame somebody when something isn't the way we think it ought to be. You've told us about some of the political jurisdictional problems here.
Yes.
Okay, I get that. Where do parents come on your list of those to blame?
I think parents need to know that there are opportunities that exist, and we need to provide the proper education for parents to actually make this about the health and wellness of their children long term.
But surely parents already know that 4 hours playing video games on the couch is not a reasonable substitute for getting outside and throwing a ball.
It's a matter of opportunities, and opportunities that are accessible. It's easy to have that video game in your house, but if you walk down the street in your neighborhood, can you get to your recreation center? Can you join a club easily? Are there barriers to participation that turn you away? Whether that's a physical barrier, whether that's a cost barrier, or whether that's a barrier that's surrounding inclusion. Do you feel welcomed? Are you having a quality experience that keeps you engaged and involved? And what is the focus of the sport or the activity that you're doing? Are you focusing on winning, or are you focusing on developing the individual to their full potential or the community? So I think one thing that we would all agree on is that individual's experience and ensuring that we're using sport and physical activity as a tool to develop them to their full potential. And also, in the long term, save some money on our healthcare system.
Well, that's it.
I just want to add one to Eagles. Steve, you'll know when we're growing up, you go outside, step out the street, like somebody throwing a baseball, somebody playing road hockey, street hockey, that's missing. Parents, you know, parents on one side, kids on the other side, all the street neighbor kids getting together and, you know, playing something.
A lot less of that now.
A lot less now.
Yeah.
And I think one other thing is the neighbors. Sometimes neighbors complain, you know, growing up, probably my kids or some of us have broken some windows, neighbors' windows. And, you know, you do something like that, there's a big complaint, and they're, you know, they are going after the kids to stop playing. I think that's where the parents and neighbors come in. You know, we all have to get involved and get the kids involved into physical education.
Although,
I think that's missing.
Have there been changes in the makeup of Canada's population over the last 20 years that may have contributed to this phenomenon as well?
No doubt. I mean, immigration. And then different sports. But that helped too. In last, I think, if you look at last 5 years, participation in soccer, field hockey, and cricket have gone way high across the country.
In part because of immigration.
Because of immigration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, the other thing was 52% of the participants in soccer are girls, you know, and they are participating regularly. And they're playing soccer. And the other thing is, I think that some of these sports are a lot cheaper to get into.
Well, I was going to say that, Diane. The cost of, you know, outfitting a kid for hockey these days could be in the thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and the fees are certainly a barrier. But there's lots of good work that's going on in the community to reduce all of those barriers. And certainly municipal recreation, that's funded by the tax base. That's its goal. That's its reason for being, is to provide access so that every kid can have that quality experience, and so that older adults can also, those you know, facing other barriers, older adults can have access to facilities and programs that are going to help them live a longer and healthier life too. And I think, you know, parents are aware. Participation has done some research that says, yeah, we're aware that our kids need to be out there 60 minutes a day, but those barriers are, you know, maybe I'm not physically literate as a parent, and I can't throw the ball to my kid, or I'm too busy because I've got three jobs.
Well, that's a good point. Give us some advice here. If you are new to Canada, and you know that the Canadian thing to do is sort of learn how to skate, but you don't know how to skate because you've come from a country maybe where there are no hockey rinks, what's the suggestion there?
There's lots of opportunities, and I know certainly in smaller communities where they may only have an arena and they've got some newcomers, they'll partner with the local businesses to make sure there's a skate drop so that every kid can get the skates for free. They open up the ice time. They get some mentors, some youth mentors involved to help teach everybody how to skate. And that could be the parents and the kids coming together. Yeah, and I know lots of schools try and work in a learn to skate, and they'll partner with the local municipality to make that happen.
Let me follow up with you. Or you wanted to say something
first? Yeah, sure. I think that it's also incumbent on sports organizations to ensure that they're making newcomers and everybody feel welcome.
Do they not do that now?
There are challenges. We've heard stories of, you know, people saying things or doing things that turn people away.
Like what?
For instance, not necessarily understanding the newcomer's culture, not necessarily being open to someone who might not necessarily be able to speak the language, but focusing on making them feel welcome. And this goes down to limited resources. Oftentimes, coaches at the local grassroots club are managers. They're the ones who are cleaning up afterwards. They're also the administrators who are filling up the paperwork. So
they're volunteers.
So the sports system isn't doing enough to increase the capacity of the grassroots organizations to ensure that the coaches, that the administrator does the paperwork, and there is someone looking at outreach and engaging not just newcomers, but the broader community itself. So
tell us this as well, because I know Belle Gasol mentioned a moment ago that, you know, we had the Pan Am Parapan Games here in the province of Ontario. They were, I think by most accounts, a great success. They really were. Lots of people went to lots of events, and it was really quite memorable. So we got facilities. I get it. I don't want to ask about facilities. I want to ask about the impression that high-performance athletes leave with the general population as to the importance of physical fitness. And if that really happens, you know, do we watch these people perform magnificently, win medals, and does that really inspire us to get off the couch and go do it?
I think Olympic Games, winning medals at Olympic Games is important in as much as it can inspire and help a young person aspire to reach those heights. Not necessarily winning a medal as well, but also being a good citizen. But I think what we're not doing right is actually the work that comes after we've had these athletes do fantastic jobs winning medals and ensuring that there is an opportunity to be engaged. And I would also caution against looking at our medal count at these games as an indicator of the health of the sports system. Because if we look back at the policy and ask, well, what is the objective of the Canadian policy? There are five broad objectives, one of which is high performance. The other is, of course, our introduction to sport, recreation sport, building an infrastructure for competitive sport, and sport for development.
Ige, that's all well. it's all well and good to say that. You know, when people watch this stuff, they want us to win. That's the bottom line, right?
Yeah.
They want us to win medals.
If more people participate, if more people are able to get out and actually be part of the team, then eventually we are going to win more medals. It's a matter of ensuring that everybody has access and everybody has the same opportunity to chase that medal if that's what they want
to
do.
Just to add to that, I think amateur athletes, Olympians and Paralympians, we don't use them enough in Canada.
Use them in what way?
In way, you know, when they win medals, you know, I mean, they are on TV during the Olympics or Paralympics. Mm-hmm. After that, nobody knows about it. You know, we got to, you know, I mean, a lot of times I talk to even some of the media, sports media, in the morning, every morning, they play replays of last, you know, night's games over and over. If you start profiling amateur athletes during those, you know, maybe once a week, you know, kids see that, you know, they get inspired. Now, other thing we should be doing, Canadian Paralympics Committee does that, they send athletes to the schools. We don't use these athletes enough. These athletes should be visiting, you know, different communities, you know, during the off season, going to schools. When kids watch them, when kids listen to them, they become role models, and the participation goes up, and those kids want to be that athlete.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I wonder if this is more of a hockey, non-hockey thing. For example, everybody knows who Hayley Wickenheiser is, Cassie Campbell. I mean, the women of this country who won medals and were fantastic hockey players that then went and visited high schools and are getting lots of media attention, that's not a problem. You know, trampolining, maybe not so much. Rhythmic gymnastics, maybe not so much. You know what I'm saying?
No, but see, the thing is, when the athlete walk into a school or a community center with a medal on, or even Olympic T-shirt on, doesn't matter who they are, what sport they are in, you know, they talk about different participation. When you talk to the stories of some of these athletes, and there's a Paralympian Benoit from Montreal. Growing up, he said he participated in 5-6 different sports. Every other week, he was bugging his parents, "No, I don't want to do this. I want to do this." And different sports. Finally, picked swimming, and he's been winning medals in swimming. Those are stories need to be told to the kids,
And that's will what's inspire
missing.
Them.
That will inspire them. That's missing.
Gotcha. Let's play, Sheldon. Should we do this now? Let's play this clip here. This past March, a girls' hockey team from Fort Hope First Nations. That is 350 kilometers north of Thunder Bay. They raised 120 grand in order to train and then attend a tournament in Ottawa, a long, long way away. Let's show that clip now. Go, Sheldon.
This group of girls from Fort Hope First Nation had an exciting week in the nation's capital. On Friday, they competed in their first ever all-girls Peewee tournament.
I think they did amazing. They had a rough start, but they were able to get comfortable with the ice, and they were working together and talking to each other on the ice. And the best thing was seeing them is support each other, especially their goalie.
Rebecca Jerome is a teacher and a coach for the 16-member hockey team. She's been working with the Rez girls since September to get here.
First, we were playing on just in the gym doing ball hockey. And then in January, when our ice froze over, we were able to go on the ice, and we've been playing on the ice since January.
Okay, most of what we've been discussing here tonight, I assume, focuses on cities or suburbs or even parts of rural Ontario as well. But we're now talking about a sports strategy that needs to take into account, Diane, very remote communities as well. How do we do that?
If you want to talk about building capacity, there's a great place to start. Finding coaches that are qualified and that can give that quality experience is a real challenge. And I think, Ige, you had likened having something similar to the Canada Arts Council for sport in your paper. And the arts have done a great job with reaching out to northern communities by sending members of the Toronto Symphony Orchestra up to work with communities. And while distance and infrastructure are a challenge, it's about finding out what those communities need and listening to them, understanding what their real challenges are. It's great that we can go build a new facility in a remote community. And we made it full of all these small rooms because they thought that would be really useful. And they said, and the community came back and said, "No, you can't do that because those rooms aren't safe for us."
Meaning what?
Meaning that's where bad things can happen in our community. Mm-hmm. And without that real interaction, listening to the community and finding out what they need and what is really going to help them achieve their wishes. I mean, these girls did it all on their own, and they picked a fantastic name for their team.
Yeah, Rez Girls.
Rez Girls. And, I think it's recognizing the unique needs of those communities and respecting them, respecting what the path is that they want to take.
Somehow, Ige, they managed to get from 350 clicks north of Thunder Bay to Ottawa, just by raising money themselves, getting corporate donations. I mean, it was a tough sled, I'm sure. How does a new sports strategy nationwide leverage private funds as well?
Well, I think we have to ask, first and foremost, how important is sport and participation for our health system? We've got to make this about health. And once we make that transition into about health and wellness, I think we'll be able to see the importance of investing in the sports system. But there are several areas that this can really have an impact on. Taking a national organization that focuses on building capacity, that gives us a plan for infrastructure, but also encourages communities to work together and looks at some of the challenges that exist in measurement and evaluation that we have in the sports sector broadly. We don't know how good or how bad we're doing when it comes to sport because we don't have an organization dedicated to monitoring the health and wellness of the sector itself.
Do we need one?
We do need one. We don't know, participation numbers are a constant challenge because there are reports that's put out different numbers every so often. But more than just participation numbers, it's understanding what we really need. It's being able to bridge the gap between the jurisdictions, but also between sport, recreation, being outside and outdoors, and ensuring that we all have the opportunities we need to stay healthy and active, and ensuring that each community, as Diane said, we understand what their needs are and there's capacity there. So
let me ask the former Minister of State for Sport about this angle, because everybody understands why corporations will give money to elite athletes, right? Because if they succeed, then the corporation succeeds. You can put them in your commercials. You can help sell their products, etc. How do you get private money flowing into less high profile, less elite kinds of circumstances?
Well, there is partnerships. You know, a lot of times when I was, sports minister, we put out something out there that Canadian government will spend this much money. Let's match it from the private sector, encourage them. And again, Canadian Tire Jumpstart and the Participation are prime examples. You know, they get funded by the government and they get private funding as well. And I think we have 52 national sports organizations.
52?
52 national sports organizations, which are funded officially from federal government. And they are counterparts in provincial. And to Igor's point, there's a communication gap. You know, that's missing.
Between
national and provincial
organizations.
And then Manitoba did a great job. What they did was they did all the provincial organizations under one roof. Okay, that took away some of the administrative costs from different organizations. I think every province should be doing that. That way they work collaboratively and they can go to the private organizations that we, as a whole, instead of everybody asking for funds as a whole, let's, bring some money in. And they can measure the participation as well from the kids.
How much did the politics of federal versus provincial organizations tick you off when you were the minister?
It's always a challenge. It's even with the provincial government. I think, Steve, every province should have the sports with education. When you look at, they have sports and culture, portfolio separate than the schools' education. Sports should always be a part of education. And if we can combine those and start from the schools and start from younger age, it will help.
And if I can add, Steve,
please, yeah.
I think if we're going to attract corporate funds, we also have to be able to tell the corporate sector that we're going to be accountable to the money that you provide to the sector. Mm-hmm. Because right now, speaking just on tax dollars, we're not really sure how the money is spent. There isn't a sense of accountability. So an organization, an arm's length Crown Corporation would be responsible to ensure that there is accountability in how the money is spent, because of course, there'd be a strategic plan behind where the funds are going.
Let me, Diane, with you, get you to weigh in on a bill that's sort of kicking around the Senate, or I guess it has been for about a year now. This was a bill, you talk about elite athletes, the former Nancy Greenring, who's no longer in the Senate, but she's subsequently retired. But, of course, one of this country's greatest ever athletes, she pitched this bill. It's been kicking around for a year now. First of all, tell everybody what it's about and where it's at.
Yeah, Bill S-228 is a bill to limit advertising of unhealthy food choices to kids. And this has been a topic that has been in our sector for a decade, probably. And so that would have a significant impact on things like naming rights for a facility, what goes in the vending machines, Timbits hockey, which you already mentioned.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, the bill itself, as I read it, is pretty high level at this point. And so both Sport Matters, which is a federal advocacy group, and the Canadian Parks and Recreation Association have submitted briefs to government to say, devil is in the detail, so let us work on the regulation so that we're not putting up barriers to participation.
Well, now we know tobacco companies can't sponsor big races
or
that kind of thing anymore, but are we saying that this bill potentially, donuts are fun to eat, but they're not necessarily the healthiest thing on the menu.
And a lot of top athletes are sponsored by sugary beverage companies.
There you go. So are we saying now that Coke and Pepsi and Timbits can't, and McDonald's can't sponsor
I remember going to the Du Maurier Jazz Festival, of course, don't we all? Yeah. And I went to the launch, and they had, you know, packages of cigarettes there. When Participaction ran a program that was sponsored by Coke, they said, it'll be water everywhere, it'll be water. But on the first event, out came Coke on platters. And it's impossible to separate the brands from their bigger names. And so I think the challenge for those recipients will be, where are we going to get those dollars if we can't do it? And who's going to step up?
Well, that's, I mean, you understand the politics of this all too well, having been a member of Parliament and of the Cabinet. How, I mean, okay, weigh in. What do you do if, can you actually say to Tim Hortons, sorry, it's going to be illegal for you to support minor hockey now?
No, we shouldn't be saying that.
We should not.
We shouldn't be saying that, but we should be working with these organizations to make sure, you know, how can we tackle this? When you look at it, when you try to stop somebody from eating something or even advertising, then urge is there to see what's in there, what's behind that, you know? But if we have education, we teach kids, you know, from younger age, what's healthy, what's not healthy, I think that's more important than banning stuff.
Yeah. So does that suggest you're okay with opening the door to having the Du Maurier Jazz Festival again, or the Players International Tennis Tournament, or that kind of thing?
No, I'm not for that at all. You know, I mean, there's certain things that are toxic, you know, for sure. And then when you look at Timbits and when you look at Coke and Pepsi, they have healthy, you know, water beverages as well.
Right.
Let's work together to cut down the ingredients so that, you know, they make more healthy drinks.
Well, the research actually shows that if you change the proportion of healthy to unhealthy food in a sport and recreation setting, the consumption of unhealthy food goes down and the consumption of healthy food actually goes up.
So let's offer
the
choice.
So let's just offer the choice. You're absolutely right. And so you just don't give the coupon for the Timbits at the end of the day. You take the smiley face off the vending machine and you make it more generic. You make it less attractive to kids. And then, you know, over time, it's not going to change overnight, but over time, we can make those incremental changes that'll improve the health of our kids.
I think it's a matter of how we define the problem. In the preamble to the bill, obesity was highlighted as a huge problem. And if we agree that, you know, it's food choices and lifestyle choices that lead to obesity, then yes, you know, this bill is certainly well-intentioned. But there's also the fact that, you know, our kids, as I mentioned earlier, are not getting enough physical activity. So if you are going to prevent corporations like Tim Hortons from providing funding so that kids can get active, then you're adding another layer of a challenge. So I think the bill is well-intentioned, but as Diane said, the devil's going to be in the details and how it's going to be implemented.
But how far would you go on this? Admittedly, this isn't part of the bill, but would you say no more chocolate bar vending machines in hockey arenas anywhere in the country? Would you go that far?
I don't think I would. Again, I think we have to provide the choice to the parents. We have to provide the choice to the people at the end of the day. And I think if our sector was well funded, if we weren't in a situation where we were looking for funding all the time, then yes, we could say, you know what? No, we're not going to be able to have chocolate bars at the arenas at all. But we're not in that situation. We need to have a partnership with the corporate sector, but we need to be able to say to the corporate sector in terms of the choices of the things that we're going to be able to accept.
Let me quote from, this is from your article, Yay. Right near the end, you say, in a world where iPhones and other digital distractions pose serious threats to the health and well-being of our citizens, as well as the sports sector, Canada needs a bold idea to ensure all Canadians have access to quality sport. Okay, let's get started. What's the bold idea?
It's really simple. We've worked so hard to create a policy that highlights all the different areas of sport and physical activity and recreation, but we've done nothing to actually implement that policy. We haven't empowered the sports sector to be able to do what we've said it should be able to do. So the idea is that create a crown corporation that is arm's length from the government, that has the responsibility to implement the policy and is accountable to the policy and to the taxpayer that will be able to provide leadership for the sector, provide good data on the health of the sector, provide accountability and stewardship of public funds, and be able to galvanize and bring together the different components of the sector such that the jurisdictional friction that we have is allayed.
Okay, let me make sure we save time here for responses. Your take on that?
Jurisdictional issues will be a factor. The National Recreation Statement provides jurisdiction for recreation to the provinces. The provinces largely, except for those shining examples like Nova Scotia and Manitoba, have devolved that to municipalities. Mm-hmm. It's tax-funded already. So changing that system, it's not insurmountable, but what role do they play? Mm-hmm. And in something like that, are they an equal partner or are they part of it? And because, you know, municipalities will continue to be the owners of all the facilities. So what role does that play? I think that's one of the challenges we'd have to come over. But in terms of removing some of the systemic barriers, some of the kind of things that are getting funded or falling through the cracks, mm-hmm. something's funded twice, something's falling through the cracks. Ideally, something that's more seamless would be a benefit.
Okay, last word to the minister. Minister, I should say.
No, I don't believe in Crown Corporation. That's another layer we're creating. We have enough, you know, organizations, enough infrastructure, enough, you know, funding from the government side. Federal government spends over $200 million. You know, it's accountability. Every sports organization have to provide, you know, yearly structure, and that's how they get funded. I think the communication is missing between national and provincial organizations. And if all the provinces can combine some of those provincial organizations under one roof, and more communication is between national and provincial organizations, I think that will work.
Okay.
Again, you know, mandatory physical education in schools from grade, you know, junior kindergarten to grade 12 is very important. That will make participation and physical activity much better.
I say we have to bring this to a close so that we can all go outside and have a good jog right now. What do you think? Let's go for a run.
Sounds like a plan.
Val Gasol is the former Minister of State for Sport in the Harper government from 2011 to 2015. We also thank Ige Egel from his eponymously named consulting services. He's got the Mowat Center piece. That's probably on their website, if they want to check it out. Yes, indeed. And Diane English, Director of Public Policy and Communications for Parks and Rec Ontario. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you.